The new year means different things to each of us, but one thing that all of us can relate to is filing our taxes. That's why for the past 15 years, I've gone to my guy Rob at ARS & Associates for all of my personal and professional accounting needs, especially during tax season. Rob is professional, he's trustworthy, and if there's something that should be on my tax return, he makes sure it's there and does not get overlooked. In addition to personal accounting, the team at ARS handles corporate work, bookkeeping, payroll, and more. So call ARS & Associates now for a free consultation at 305-653-7350 or visit their website at arsaccounting.com. That's arsaccounting.com. And make sure you mention that the Fish Tank sent you to get 20% off the cost of preparing your tax return. Start saving now.
You're now diving into the Fish Tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Trap OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dolph fans, number one. One, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank. Seth Levitt here with OJ McDuffie. We're back in the Fish Tank Studios, Juice.
Right, man. 2020.
2020.
Let's go.
How you doing, man? Holidays treated you well?
So far, so good, man. You know, hopefully it's got to be better than 2020. It's got to be better than 2019.
Let's hope so.
On a lot of levels.
You just told me, always got to be moving forward. Can't stay the same you're falling behind. Listen, speaking of the holidays and a gift, we have a true gift for us and the listeners today with our guest. Took some work to get this guy in here, not because he didn't want to be here.
I think he's big time, man. Guys take a lot of time to get big time guys. Got to schedule well in advance.
He pulled a JT on us.
That's right.
He had to run it through some protocol, but he made it happen. Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald joins us in the tank. Armando, welcome.
Gentlemen, thank you for speaking with my agency and my agents and negotiating harshly with them and finally getting me to come on over here. It's my pleasure to be in your company.
We're glad a hat and a t-shirt.
At least OJ.
Satisfied.
At least OJ. Right. Right. We'll get into all the reasons why that joke's apparent here. But no, it's awesome to have you here, Armando. I don't think anybody who's listened to the show, they listen, they've read, they somehow have been in contact with your work in some way, shape, or form. You are, I don't want to say you are shaping the way that they take in their Miami Dolphins, but you've had some influence and you've had some information for them over the years, whether they like you, whether they hate you, not that you care either way, but they're reading what you have to say, they're listening to what they have to say, and I think it's really awesome to get a chance to hear some of those stories here in the tank.
Oh no, I definitely care. I mean, everybody likes to be liked, right? The funniest thing is when people email me or get a hold of me through social media and blame me for stuff like you're ruining the Miami Dolphins or you're doing this to the Dolphins. And I'm like, yo,
you're just telling the story.
I'm not on the field. Right. I don't make decisions. I don't do anything.
But damn it, it seems like he is sometimes, Juice, because he's in there.
A lot of things he says seem to come to fruition, man.
Yeah, which I don't know.
You know, and I understand that too, man, because the fans, like I am right now, man, they're just blind out there. They have no idea what's going on. They do want to blame you and other guys that are out there reporting. All you're doing is reporting what you know.
Right.
You know, but yeah, they're a trip.
A little commentary, too. You know, he's in that columnist realm these days.
That's true, too.
A little bit.
So sometimes it's what he knows, and sometimes it's what he thinks based on what he knows. And then, you know, sometimes that rubs people the wrong way. Which, by the way, you brought up social media. I saw that one of your resolutions here in 2020 is you cleared all the blocked, all the blocked accounts.
Yes.
So what goes into a fan or somebody that gets blocked by Mondo?
Oh, wow. So, look, I make my living telling people what I think, and I make my living in some regard telling people when they're wrong, right? And so I don't mind. Right. And so I don't mind people telling me when I'm wrong because I'm human. I get it wrong more often than I'd like to admit. And so I'm open, right? But there's a line of respect,
right?
Don't you think?
Absolutely.
Like, I don't, disrespect the Miami Dolphins. I love the Miami Dolphins. I appreciate the Miami Dolphins. I feed my family because of the Miami Dolphins.
Right.
But I show up and I respect that team and I respect the people that I talk about and cover. On social media, where you're behind the keyboard and it's anonymous Joe behind the keyboard, the respect factor goes out the window. And gentlemen, I'm a grown ass man.
Right.
You're gonna, you know, I'm too old to be like dealing with somebody who's 23 years old telling me what he thinks and what he thinks of my family.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
blocked.
So
crossing lines. Yeah.
But you've let him back in now. You've forgiven him. You've given him a chance.
Let them back in for the new year until the next moment that they disrespect.
Right. And I'm gonna tell you what. I mean, getting blocked by Armando, that's a bad thing because I mean, so much good stuff comes out of what he says. I follow him on Twitter all the time, man,
Thank you, sir.
Like, yeah, absolutely, man. The information you get. No, I didn't talk about your family.
There's that.
Now, if you were still playing now and Twitter was a thing, would Armando be blocked? Like, where would we be at with
this? No, I think Armando would be. He's been fair to me. He was fair to me. You know what I mean? And I, as long
all
as somebody's
fair,
that's all
right?
You can
fair
ask
fair and
for,
accurate.
You know what's funny? I'm going to share this with you. So I don't know, for whatever reason, I follow the Dolphins players. None of them follow me. And so I'm thinking, man.
That's a good thing.
No,
I think
I'm thinking,
doing a favor.
Wow, what's going on? Am I like that despicable or what? I'm a jerk? But the funny thing is, like sometimes I'll write something or say something, and then their names pop up on my mentions as liking or
right.
They don't know that I know that I see.
So they're finding it.
So
and you know they're finding it.
Yeah, so they're not following me, but somehow they find a way to see it. I don't know if they've got a bunch of burner accounts or what's going
the
on.
Burner account is a real thing.
You know, this year, so I wrote like what it meant that the Dolphins front office was going in a certain direction and what it meant for some players who were not happy. And Minka Fitzpatrick liked it.
Really?
Who did not follow me.
Right.
But in my mentions, I'm driving and bing on the iPhone, Minka Fitzpatrick like.
Well, we've seen that. I think Mama Fitzpatrick was following.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So
yeah.
She might have. That's where that intel got there.
Last night, for example, so I wrote, I didn't write, I tweeted that the Dolphins should go ahead and interview Callahan from the Redskins.
Saw
who's
that.
A great offensive line coach. Bing! Daniel Kilgore.
Wow.
Liked it.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
it's
hilarious.
Pretty funny.
And it's funny that you're seeing it because, I mean, you're getting a lot of likes on these things, but you're definitely, there's a filter there where you're figuring out who's who.
Yeah, they don't follow,
right?
But they follow.
Armando, how's that? How's the Twitter world changed what you do? I mean, that's obviously that's the stories you're talking about. But the Twitter world's got to have changed your business, your job a lot, right?
A lot. You know, it used to be that I used to work a whole lot less.
Right, now 24/7 now.
That was a whole lot more fun.
Yeah.
Now you're on. It's like you're keeping doctor's hours, OJ, and. Not getting doctor's pay.
Right.
Interesting.
No, you're not doing so bad, though, now.
No, I'm all right. I'm all right. I am blessed.
Without any malpractice insurance.
Right, indeed, right. Indeed. And so you're doing that, but now, as a result, people are a lot more careful. It used to be that if we were in the locker room, I could sit with you, OJ, and Seth would kind of like leave us alone,
right.
And we would talk. And everything you said was not on social media in the next 2 minutes.
So you're saying the subject is more careful, not necessarily the media member?
Absolutely.
But the
no, well, the subject is more careful because the media members, they're younger and they don't have a certain degree of, you know, trying to hold back and trying to think about. They don't think.
Well, it's a race to first now.
It's a race to first, not necessarily a race to write.
That's
right.
I've said
right.
that. Right. You know,
said it a bunch of times.
And I'm so glad that I didn't have to be a PR guy during this whole social media era, which, God, I just sound like a dinosaur as I'm telling this story. But I really believe that there was a time where there was not just a race to be first, but the accuracy was so important because
right.
everybody consumed on something that was in print that you couldn't just delete
right.
and it
right.
was going to be out there
or
and
edit.
You know
yeah.
and you had to either deal with a retraction, which is a big pain in the ass, and then no one ever likes where they're inputted, or you have to actually go ahead and write something new. So now you can just push it out there, be the race to first, and then take it back. And I'm glad I don't have to deal with that.
And when people get it wrong, they don't necessarily take it back
right.
or retract or get it. I mean, the other day there was a report that the Jacksonville Jaguars had already told Doug Marrone that he was fired and that he was going to coach his last game on Sunday. And then the Jaguars came out and said, not only have we not told him, he might stay. And guess what? He stayed.
Right, right.
And did ESPN retract or correct or say, hey, sorry we got it wrong? No.
Right. Craziness.
Yeah, they're probably one of the worst at it, right? They think
they're such a machine. Their shit doesn't stink. There's so many people. Exactly. Well, there's that too. Yeah. There is that too. So again, I mentioned, I think for the better part of probably all of our listeners' lives, you know, as we've been watching the Dolphins, Armando's somehow, some way been a part of that experience. But take us back prior to you being a Miami Herald writer who covered the Miami Dolphins. Like, how did that come about? I know you're a UM guy, but take us on that journey a little bit about how you came from being someone, a young person in South Florida, to somebody who ends up covering the Miami Dolphins. And a lot of ways over the course of time here, you're the guy who covers the Miami Dolphins.
All right, so
pissed off a lot of journalists, by the way. Yeah. A lot of guys.
So let's do this quick because it ain't about me. You know what I'm saying?
This is about you. This is your pod.
Nah. I was born.
A little bit.
No, so, you know, I'm a Miami guy. I got the immigrant story that a million people in Miami had and came from Cuba and learned the language and now think in English now. And it's funny because I remember being a kid and watching Paul Warfield play and trying to walk like Paul Warfield because that
you don't
guy,
have that kind of swag.
Nobody.
I'm sorry.
Does. Now nobody does. Right. And fair. With all respect you, Mr. McDuffie, that man is like the coolest cat in the world.
Super cool.
I mean,
it's an Ohio thing, right?
Yeah,
Coons?
That's what it is.
I mean,
Ohio bred.
Back in the day, Superfly was taking lessons from Paul Warfield. All right,
that's awesome.
And so that's where the Dolphins entered my world. You know, fast forward 20 years. It's 1989 or 1990. It's 1990 actually. And the Palm Beach Post hired me away from the Miami Herald. I was covering the University of Miami at the time. They hired me away to cover, you know, Don Shula and Dan Marino and the Miami Dolphins. And I'm like, okay. And I'm 25 years old or whatever it was. And I'm going, wow, so interesting. And it was interesting because initially there was pushback. I get a lot of go cover baseball, you know,
of course.
That
wow.
stuff.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Go cover baseball. What do you go cover soccer? That.
Are you serious?
You know where I'm
going.
Yeah,
no, I know exactly where you're going. Yeah.
I get that.
Right.
That's I get that crazy. A lot. I still get it.
Right. They're thinking a Cuban American can't cover football. He should be covering sports that more Cubans play.
Right. And by the way, we don't play soccer.
There. Exactly right.
Dang it. We suck at soccer. So there was that. But what is amazing is the players, they don't think like that. They respect they understand that you're in there and you're talking to them and your work shows up about them. And this is a generation of people that now have women in the locker room.
That's commonplace.
Right.
As
yeah,
commonplace.
Right.
Yeah. Asian Americans, Hispanic Americans. Everything.
Right.
It is a melting pot. A locker room is amazingly one of the biggest melting pots in a country that is a melting pot.
Right.
And there is disagreements in how people think and how, you know, their worldview. But for 3 hours a week, there is a one heartbeat, one mind type of thing. And that other stuff doesn't matter. And it's amazing. And they carry it over to a large degree to how they handle themselves in the world.
Yeah.
And I think it's a beautiful thing. And I appreciate the fact that initially, at least, I was allowed to do that and nobody questioned my credentials or my cred. And then I established that through my work.
Yeah. I think that's one of the amazing things about sports in general, but especially about football. When you're looking at 70 plus thousand people in a stadium, no matter what their politics are about or what their orientation is about or anything else, race, religion, football is always, we're always rooting for the same team, you know, and it really does bring people together. And I wish people would think about that more often when they're, you know, especially through social media, you see all the stuff that goes on. But football and sports in general do bring people together. And that's why I also love, like, you know, World Cup, when it brings the whole country together at times, you know?
Yeah, ever thought about covering soccer, Mondo?
Yeah.
I have not gotten that suggestion ever.
So, Roddy, you're talking about going back to 89 and 90 and covering the legendary Don Shula. You know, how intimidating was that as a 25-year-old?
It was intimidating because at that point he was still
the Don.
He was still he still had his fastball, and it was, you know, this guy only won 2 Super Bowls and lifted up a trophy after a perfect season. That's and now I'm questioning him? What? Are you kidding me? But interestingly, Don Shula was very respectful. And when you would ask a question that was like probably out of line or not in the direction that probably you should be going, he would say something like, I would ask him, well, what about Bruce Hardy? And what's your plan with him? And Don Shula would look over and he'd say, you don't want to be asking me about Bruce Hardy this week.
Damn.
This week.
This week. It didn't take me long to figure out that I don't want to be writing about Bruce Hardy this week because Bruce Hardy's not in the game plan. Right. All right?
Wow.
And he didn't say, you dumb idiot, you know, Mondo guy. We're not going in that direction. He hasn't caught a pass in 3 weeks. And we're using the name Bruce Hardy.
Right.
Bruce Hardy was a great player, and it's a generic thing. But he had this classy way of guiding you, of making sure that you knew what was going on without him just totally regurgitating everything that he knew about what was going to happen. It was amazing. Amazing.
But was there ever a moment that maybe you wrote something that he didn't like that
Actually, you know what? So I covered Don Shula for 5 years.
Okay.
5 seasons. 90, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95. 6 seasons. I can do math.
as long as you got your access to your
as
hands.
As long as I got my fingers. Yeah, words, bro, not math. All right? Words, not numbers. There's only one time where he was angry with what I wrote, and it was the most ridiculous stuff. So I think one year in like 93 or 94, it was the preseason, and the Dolphins were going to go to Orlando to to play and practice. No, it was Tampa Bay. They were playing and practicing with the Bucks. And I needed a story to carry me for a day. And so I asked Harvey Green, who was the media relations guy.
And a
for
good
the
friend
Dolphins.
To the tank, yes.
Yes, indeed. I asked him, Harvey, so what's it like to be on the road with the Dolphins? What's, you know, what, tell me, give me some anecdotes about this. And Harvey proceeds to tell me about how, you know, he stocks Coach Shula's room with food and beer and you know, and stuff like that. And so I wrote it. Next day, I show up to the hotel in Tampa, and Harvey is waiting for me to as I walk into the lobby, and he goes, you might have gotten me fired. And I'm like, what are you talking about? How did I get you fired? Coach Shula is pissed about you writing that we stock his refrigerator in his room with beer. And I'm like, what? Are you serious? You told me this.
Right.
I know you didn't. I didn't mean for you to write it, but you told me.
Harvey knows better than that.
So that happens. They play the game. 2 days later, they're back in Davie at their training facility. And I would go over during the days when there's no practice just to sit over there. And I knew that Shula would run every afternoon with Stuart Weinstein, mm-hmm. who was a security guy. They'd jog. And I knew what time it would happen. And he'd come off the field and he'd come over and sit with me and just talk. Well, this day, he comes over and...
How naive of you, young Armando.
Yes. He comes over and sits with me. And that was the... Have you ever been MF'd by Don Shula?
Thankfully, I haven't. But Juice probably has had a moment.
Once.
Yeah, how'd that feel?
No, it wasn't good.
No,
that was the last time, too. That was the last time.
So one of the first things he says is, you make me look like an ass. And I'm like, what are you... What? And he said... You're writing about all this beer that I get into my refrigerator. You make me look like I'm a drunk. I'm like, that's not what I said. I didn't say you were drunk. You didn't say anybody else drank it, did you? Who do the people think that
who's drinking
the damn beer? And I'm like, wait a minute. Your guy.
That's funny.
Am I wrong? And he's like, I don't care if it's true or not, you right. blankety blank blank.
Right.
The beauty of Don Shula, though, is he rose to that height of anger because of his reputation, because of his, he thought that it affected his integrity somehow. But 10 minutes later, he's forgotten it and he's moved on. And I am, you know, sitting in my own urine because I peed myself.
I was going to say, had you moved on in 10 minutes?
Because, you know, the man is just reaming me out. But he starts talking about the offensive line to me and other things. And I'm like, is this for real? I mean, it changes like that?
Yeah, but how long did it take you to recover?
Years. It was years later when I finally changed my diaper and I was better.
That is unbelievable. Well, not your experience.
No. Well, you know, guys, we pee on ourselves all the time anyway. It's football players.
Well, apparently so. Channing Crowder does. Right. If anybody does, we know that serious. Channing does. So, all right. Well, so that was your Don Shula experience.
That was my Don Shula moment.
He wasn't the only legend in that locker room that you had to cover.
True that.
There was another guy who slung the ball around a little bit.
Yeah.
And who wasn't afraid to MF somebody as right. well. But Dan Marino. So not only were you covering Don Shula, but you also were a young guy covering Dan Marino,
right.
who was, well, shoot, Dan Marino became Dan Marino about as soon as they handed him a football. So by 91 or so, I mean, living legend. So what was that like?
Very interesting. It was different back then. All right. So now they do everything that they can.
I feel like we're going to say that a lot.
Yeah.
It was different back then.
They do everything they can to keep players away from guys like me. They bring the quarterback out once a week and he talks for 10 minutes to everybody. And then you don't see him again until game day. Back then,
like that when I worked there, too.
Back then, Wednesday game. I remember sitting at lunch with Dan Marino and having lunch with Dan Marino.
Wow.
And interviewing him while he ate pasta or something and offered me some. And it was just different. And he would come in the locker room all the time and shoot the breeze and stuff like that. It was interesting because so when that year that he was injured with the Achilles, he had a lot of time on his hands.
Was that 94?
94.
I want to say 93.
Yeah, I think it's my rookie year.
Yeah.
93.
And he had a lot of time on his hands. I remember one week, Disney World sent Mickey and Minnie, like life-size people wearing Mickey and Minnie, heads and stuff like that.
Down. Wait, you mean they're not real?
To do what's that?
You mean Mickey and Minnie aren't real? Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry to burst your bubble of joy there, Seth.
Cut. This is bullshit, man.
I'm out of here. And so there's people underneath that stuff. And so they're filming this, promotional gig, whatever, commercial, with Scott Mitchell, who was now the Dolphins quarterback.
Yeah.
And Scott Mitchell comes in the locker room and he's like, talking about the experience, and Dan Marino is sitting there listening, and he goes, hey, Scott, did you tell, when it got too, because he was talking about how it got long, and it went over, and they had to do takes and retakes, and how Minnie messed up a couple of times. And Marino says, hey, Scott, I got to be careful how I say this.
Just say it.
At some point, did you tell Minnie to just, you, the B word.
Gotcha.
And we're sitting there going, so Dan Marino wants Minnie Mouse to, is it fellatio or the other? What is that? I don't know.
When it's a mouse, I don't know. Well, it's a whole different thing.
To
man.
Scott Mitchell. And Scott Mitchell, a Mormon who had not ever sinned in his life. He like turns this white, pale white. Like, what did you just say to me? I have no idea that you can say stuff like that.
So I'm guessing he didn't say that to Minnie.
No, he had never said that to Minnie. Dan Marino was a cool guy. This is my favorite Dan Marino story, though, happened last year. Or was it last year or the year before at the Super Bowl? So at the Super Bowl, everybody has to wear this ID tag because to get everywhere. Right? Because there's a lot of security. They're worried about terrorists and this, that, and the other thing. So Dan Marino comes over to the Miami Super Bowl committee booth with his entourage, and I'm standing there, I'm waiting for him, and we're just talking, and he goes to me, so that's an interesting, you see that that pass you got there? I said, yeah. He goes, yeah, I don't need no pass. And I go, okay. And then he goes, you know why? And I said, yeah, because you're Dan freaking Marino. He goes, that's right. That's right. I don't need no pass.
I can hear him saying it too.
That just tells you Dan Marino knows Dan Marino now.
He's very well aware.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
He don't need no pass.
Nope. Hey, Juice, the only thing better than looking clean is looking clean on your own time.
No doubt about it, Big Seth. And that's why I always call my man Ara at A&T Dry Cleaners anytime I need my clothes laundered or dry cleaned.
Tell him exactly why you call Ara.
Because A&T offers free pickup and delivery at your home or office, so you never have the inconvenience of trying to find time to take your dry cleaning somewhere. They bring it to you.
That's exactly right, Juice. You can walk into their Fort Lauderdale location, but A&T serves Miami-Dade, Broward, and the Southern Palm Beaches with their convenient pickup and delivery services, which also include alterations, shoe repair, and more.
And A&T is a family-owned company, and they've been in business since 1980.
1980.
Yeah, and you know what? That means customer service is their priority.
So call Ara today at 954-610-9383. That's his personal cell we're giving you. Or you can visit drycleanertoyou.com to start making your life and your dry cleaning a lot easier.
And make sure you tell them that the Fish Tank sent you, because Ara, my man, is giving our listeners 50% off your first order.
How much?
50. Half, Seth, half. And 25% off any dry cleaning services after that.
A&T Dry Cleaning, the official dry cleaners of the Fish Tank.
You know, Armando, it's like, I consider myself like pretty friendly with the media. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Absolutely.
But I also felt like, you know, we always had such a great relationship, and you've got a great relationship with a lot of guys and coaches, you know, and a lot of stuff that people talk to you about. Like you're talking about with Danny's probably off the record shit. You know what I mean?
Until this podcast.
Right. Well, yeah, well, that's just minor stuff. We've heard worse.
We've heard a lot worse.
You know, how do you maintain those relationships, man? I know that, you know, they trust in what you're saying. Obviously, that's the main reason, but you know, that's a great end with a lot of guys that, you know, they do trust you and that you only tweet or post or, you know, or write shit that, you know, that's cool to write about, you know, even though you have some really good stuff that, you know, you probably kept in the vault.
Yeah. I think trust is the word that matters. And, you know, I admit I push the envelope. I don't cross the line, but I go right up to it, you know, mm-hmm. And I tippy toe on it. But people appreciate that most of the time I don't hurt them. I guard them with my life. I'd rather take a hit than have them take a hit. I will do whatever I need to do to make sure that they are not in any way hurt by what I write or what they tell me. Am I 100% on that? Probably not. In fact, I know not. But for the most part, people understand that, one, it's going to be true. Two, they can trust me with information that is delicate. And three, if I present it, it will be presented in a fair manner. And not, you know, there's no point in taking hits and right. taking jabs at people for nothing, except if it's Mean Joe Green.
Let's write that one down.
Yeah, that's a long story.
Well, we're going to have to get that one. I don't have that on the list.
We got plenty of time for it.
Yeah. So I think that helps the reputation, and it sort of multiplies on itself. Mm-hmm. They feel like they've trusted you once, and it's good, and so they trust you again. And again, and then they tell somebody who tells somebody, and they keep trusting you. And you build confidence with people, and you don't burn them, and it works. I think it works great.
Yeah, it's worked really well for you, and we'll get into some of those stories in a little bit. But, I mean, it just seems like, you know, I think one hand kind of washes the other in the sense that probably one of the reasons you've been around as long as you have is because you have this ability to get information and to make people comfortable that they'll share information with you. And I, you know, not asking you to reveal sources in this situation, but just the idea, as Juice, you know, alluded to, that whether it's a player, whether it's a coach, whether it's a personnel person, whether it's sometimes somebody that the last person in the world that we would think is the person that you're getting this information from, somehow, some way, you're always the fucking guy that they end up going to. And, you know, what is that? How's that happening?
Favor? I don't know. I don't know.
But you don't want to give up all your tricks, right?
No,
you
know? Right. No, it's not that. It's like you say, we don't want you to say who your sources are. And I would say to you, outside the locker room, everybody.
Right.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody.
I hear you.
So
I know it.
So because people have personal feelings and they have personal views
and agendas
at times. Yes, and that too. And sometimes it's the most delicate stuff is when you've got two sources and they're against each other.
Yeah.
Because that's hard. Yeah. That's really hard. And I don't mind telling you, like, for example, Tony Sperano and Jeff Ireland, that was hard.
Mm.
That was hard. And they obviously were great early on in their tenure. And at the end, it was irrevocably broken. And it was one against the other.
Wow.
And both of them had messages that they wanted out there. And both of them made sure that message was carried through me.
So how are you balancing that? To what point is something real information, and to what point is something strictly somebody's opinion? Because I would say something, your writing style, at times you speak about things as they are fact, and oftentimes it's because you know they are fact.
Right.
But so like even in your columns sometimes, where a lot of folks it'll be, this is how I feel about something, you're very matter of fact, which I think sometimes is one of the things that people get all riled up about. It's like, Armando's talking about this shit like he knows. And how, in a situation like that, because it's one of those things where he said, truth is in the middle.
Right.
You know, how are you handling that?
It's delicate. It really is. And we're talking about way back in 2011, obviously. There's been other times, like when a certain, Pro Bowl and Hall of Fame defensive end had an issue with a certain Hall of Fame.
Now that is on the list.
Executive vice president.
That is on the list. We are going to discuss it.
And it's like, you want to be fair to everybody, and you want to be fair to both of them because, both of them are important to you. Extremely important to you. It's hard. It's hard when that happens. Now, and there's another time when it's, the Pro Bowl, Pro Football Hall of Fame defensive ends agent. And the general manager of the Miami Dolphins and the agent is calling me up and he's saying, yeah, Jeff Ireland says I shouldn't be talking to you. So I told him, when we get done talking here, I'm going to call you and tell you everything we said. And that
Gary
happened.
Gary was that guy, man.
Gary was Shard. That happened. And I'm like, okay. Cause Jeff Ireland had called him and said, why the F am I reading everything that we talk about in the Miami Herald? And Gary said, because I told Armando. And Jeff is like, stop doing that. Don't do that. Don't do that. And let's do this, 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 and this. And Gary was like, no, I don't agree with that. I'm going to call Armando. It's like
Gary would wake Armando up, and Gary was in California,
yeah.
3 hours behind, and he would wake Armando up and be like, what are you doing? You still sleeping?
Yeah,
Armando's like, it's 6 a.m. It's fucking 3 a.m. where you are. What do you mean?
I'm not a morning person, and I've made the habit of missing more than one story because of that, by the way. Yeah.
I do remember that.
Yeah,
we
right?
tried real hard to call you on that one.
Yeah.
Since I'm going to go completely out of order here, Juice, but since we're in it and we're talking about this whole thing with Parcells and Gary and this and that, and I talked about this a little bit when Jeff Darlington, who worked alongside of you for a little while, was here in the tank. But when JT and the whole Parcells thing and all that craziness and Dancing with the Stars and traded to Washington, but then he comes back, right? And he's going to come back. And it was exciting for him. We knew it was going to be exciting for this community. Thought it was a great thing for everybody. John Clayton is fed by Gary, the story. He's John Clayton. I mean, at that point, right, the professor and John Clayton was like the guy nationally. And so the story was all cooked up and ready, and we're just waiting for JT to sign on the dotted line. But he had made the commitment. He knew he was coming back. The team had made the commitment, the offer, the whole thing. And so then the story comes out the morning that the team wants to announce it, and Harvey calls me and starts chewing my ass. And I'm like, wait a minute. What do you know? Oh, it's a new regime. They handle things differently here, this, that, and the other. Okay. Now, in the background, I know that everyone's pissed off because Parcells talks to nobody except this guy, except Armando. Parcells is talking to nobody at that point. He had insulated himself and because he could push Jeff out there and Tony out there. So he literally didn't have to talk to anybody and never did. But he was feeding Armando and everybody knew it and hated it, but they had to deal with it. And so it was whatever. So the next day, there's a fucking story, big headlines where Armando's writing how JT was sat down like a child and told what he's going to do and what he's not going to do, the whole thing. And now I'm fucking pissed. I'm pissed. And I call Harvey. I said, Harvey, I respect you. You gave me a, and I know I told the story already, but I'm like, everybody fucking knows that Parcells talks to Armando, and you're going to sit here and give me a speech about a good thing, a positive thing. JT's coming back. The hero's coming back to town. And then, so then Armando calls me like the next day and he goes, you fucked me. I mean, what do you mean? I fucked you. You wrote about my guy. So what did Parcells tell you after that? What happened?
Let me take you behind the curtain of how Bill Parcells' relationship with me started.
Yeah.
So it's 2007 and the Dolphins are a mess, right? They're like,
to say the least.
They're on their way to 1-15 and Cam Cameron is the worst coach in the history of the franchise.
Damn near professional football.
It's awesome. Amazing. They were failing forward fast and they were turning their thumbs nice. This direction nice. And they had drafted the Ginn family and it was just a disaster. So they hire Bill Parcells. Wayne Huizenga goes up to wherever, Saratoga or
stole him from Atlanta.
Who was on the porch while Wayne Huizenga's on the back, on the front door. And amazing.
Yeah. And they got Matt Ryan though.
So anyway. I hear, okay, Bill Parcells is now the guy. And I get Bill Parcells' phone number. Someone in New York gave me his number. And so I'm going to go and call Bill Parcells. And I call him and I say, Bill, yeah. This is Armando Salguero at the Miami Herald. I can't tell you anything. I have nothing to say. I really can't help you in any way, Armando. Sorry. Click. End of phone conversation. Okay, fine. 3 months later, I call him back up and he goes, how did you get my number anyway? I forgot to ask you the last.
He hung up too soon, Bill.
This is how he starts the conversation. How did you get my number anyway? And I told him, Bill, you know, that's what I do, man. This is what I do. So I got your number and I'm going to use it. That's right. He's like, you better not.
You're talking to me right now, aren't you?
Anyway, so that conversation ends. Another 3 months goes by. I have to call him for something. He answers the phone. Are you going to call me every day? I haven't called the man in like 3 months. Are you going to call me every day? I just want to know. Is that what you're going to do? Call me every day. And I said to him, if that's what I have to do, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And something turned right there because Bill Parcells, bless his heart, he's a tough guy. He's a Jersey guy. If in another life, he was a mobster, bro. I mean, that guy whacked people in another life.
Juice, you remember what Gary said about Parcells and being a Jersey guy?
No.
He goes, the problem with Parcells is he's a Jersey guy and he fucking wants to be a New York guy and he can't be.
That's funny.
So anyway, sorry.
That's funny.
I couldn't help myself.
I love it. So, you know, I think at that moment he realized that, you know, I'm a grown-ass man too, you know? He wasn't going to back me down. So he figured, okay, let's bring this guy in. And I appreciated the fact that he was honest with me, or as honest as he could be going forward. He once told me, I've got this organization locked up like a tuna can. And I'm thinking, but I'm on the phone with you.
Right.
Right.
And it was pretty cool.
Right.
And obviously that's something that you know, we can share whatever it is 15 years later. It's not 15 years later. What is it? Nine, it's whatever.
9, 10 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 12 years later, 12 whatever years later. It is. But
I don't know. I tried to put it out of my, yeah, out of my mind.
But this is a guy that had won Super Bowls, was on his way to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he's my guy.
Yeah. That's where you want to be right there.
So he was his guy.
Yeah.
Told him, you know, that, so they were going to get back at JT and Gary because of the story with Clayton. The real breaking news that JT said he was excited to come back and be a Miami Dolphin, and that fucking pissed him off somehow. So then they had to push this story out that, you know, they sat JT down and told him this is the way it is now. New sheriff in town. Rah, 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 rah. All that bullshit, right? So Armando writes it. And I tell Harvey in no uncertain terms that I, you know, don't call me telling me how to do my job anymore. I don't work for you anymore. I respect the hell out of you. I don't work for you anymore. I work for Jason Taylor. And, oh, by the way, don't talk about, you know, leaking stories when your guy just fucking leaked a story and doesn't talk to anybody. Doesn't make himself available to anybody. And he just leaked the story to Armando. So I guess I shut that relationship down for a couple months.
No.
Okay. Still good.
No.
Still good.
I mean, maybe you did. I don't know. I didn't call
him. Time, called every 3 months anyway.
Well, every 3 months. At the time he told me he kind of put a little moratorium on you. That was his little slap on the wrist for you. But I mean, it was the off season. It was a meaningless time at that point in time.
Yeah.
And it just,
maybe
it
I
was
told
ridiculous.
You that to work you a little bit.
It could have been. It could have been.
You're hurting
been
me, Seth. What are you doing to me, Seth? What is this John Clayton?
You gotta make it up to me.
What is this John Clayton getting JT stories about? What's that about?
That was Gary.
Yeah, that was
that
Gary.
Was Gary making
that was
happen.
Before you introduced Gary to me.
Was that pre? I thought that
was
happened.
Pre you and me and Gary.
Wow. I thought that was all. No,
was it?
No, I thought you and Gary were already. You guys had already
what
been
year
communicating.
Was that?
This was after he had already come back from Washington. You were talking to Gary during the whole Dancing with the Stars bullshit.
Oh yeah,
big time.
Yeah, yeah. That went sideways a couple of times too.
it did when JT threw you a curveball, but it happens. So we've skipped a few regimes here, and one that I'm fond of, Juice has different relationship to what have you, but after your experience with Coach Shula after 1995, that was his final season on the sidelines for the Dolphins. And then it was a lot of speculation, and we call it speculation now. We understand why, that Jimmy Johnson would be the next head coach.
Sure.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but when the speculation kind of came to a point where it was like everywhere, did you go down to the Keys and find out for yourself?
Yeah.
You had to get on the road.
Oh, I got a nice little assist on that story
from a fly on the wall. I'm not a morning person, but I had to wake up at like 4 in the morning to drive down to – wherever it was he was living at the Isla Mirada or something. And I was outside. I was on his driveway when Jimmy Johnson came out for the morning newspaper.
Did you deliver the Miami Herald to him?
I was there.
There's your Herald, sir.
Hot off the press.
I was there. And,
let me just finish this story I'm writing.
And, of course, he didn't talk to me on the record, but he talked to me, like, you know, not on the record. And that was cool. That was fine. I, you know, made the drive worthwhile. And a couple of days later, he's hired to be the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. But that's not the Jimmy Johnson story.
No, it's
it?
Not. That was just a lead-in to, right. to, you know, since we're talking about how you get these stories and people to
right,
talk to you.
Right.
But I don't know if you know this story, Juice, and I forget what season it was. You'll have better context
it
for
it. It was his final season.
So, okay, so that would be 99.
Yep.
All right. And Jimmy was a little pissed at Jason Cole. Now, Jason Cole, let me say this. He's probably going to be listening to this because Jason has been an amazing supporter of the Fish Tank and loves the show, and we can't wait to get Jason in the tank. But Jason was working alongside Armando at the time for the Herald, and Jason had his own reputation and his own methods and his own way of getting stories and breaking stories and rubbing people the wrong way and all that great stuff. And he pissed Jimmy off. And Jimmy was going to let him know about himself. So we're sitting on the field and Harvey goes, I got to go to the players' lounge. And Jimmy walks from the practice field and basically is like, you, and calls Jason Cole, Armando, and Harvey into the players' lounge. And it was very animated, but I wasn't in there. And you were, sir.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
So that morning started out with, I'm in the shower at like 7
wait
in the morning.
Wait a minute, I didn't need all that. No,
and Harvey Green calls, and he says, are you coming out today? And I'm like, yeah,
I cover
the Miami Dolphins. Are the Miami Dolphins, like, did they shut down? No, okay, then I think I'll go. And he's like, I gotta tell you, Jimmy's pissed. And I'm like, what? About what? Well, it's a story that was written, and you need to be here to answer for it. And I'm like,
what did I write?
I wrote something that pissed him off, which is fine because it wouldn't have been the first time. But nonetheless, at least I want to know. No. I'll tell you when you get here.
Oh, shit.
So I
show
up. Like
that. They didn't give you a heads up.
They gave me a heads up. I walk, from the back gate over to the practice field, and I took maybe 4 steps onto the field. They were already practicing, and I see off in the distance Jimmy Johnson already doing this to Harvey Green, and they're waving his arms, and they're walking with a purpose now towards me and the players' lounge. And Jason Cole was there, and Harvey Green and Jimmy Johnson call me and Jason Cole into the players' lounge, at which point Jimmy Johnson reaches into his back shorts pocket and takes out a story.
He had the clip.
He had the story that he had actually cut it out of the newspaper with, like, highlighted, highlighted portions.
He did that on his own. We didn't do that.
Highlighted and circled. And long story short, Jason Cole, remember, this was 1999. Jimmy Johnson quit for a day,
right,
in 98 because he didn't want to do it anymore. He packed his office up.
Why didn't he just stay packed up?
And he was done. That's fair. That's a fair sentiment. And then he changed his mind. Wayne Huizenga did the Jedi mind trick on him and offered him a chance to coach only home games if he wanted.
Hey, at least he didn't take that.
But the point.
You can just coach home games.
Can you imagine?
I can, because fucking Parcells only came to home games. Sorry.
So he didn't take that, but it was clear that it wasn't the same, right? And so what Jason wrote was that Jimmy Johnson had taken a step back during the offseason, had gone on vacation, missed the owners' meetings or something like that, didn't go to some other, wasn't there for an OTA or something like that, which wasn't open at the time to the media anyway. And Jimmy was pissed because in his mind, it suggested to him that he wasn't trying and wasn't 100% invested. So Jimmy pulls this. So what is the policy on this podcast with
let it rip
curse?
I mean, I already told you said that Dan Marino said that Mickey should blow Scott Mitchell.
Yes.
So I mean, come on, the seal's broken,
I didn't
brother.
Use that word, but yeah, okay. So yeah,
no, so, it's all.
Okay, so
we have a big E by it, so we're good.
Yeah, we're telling people in advance. Okay. This is explicit content.
Okay, I love it. So Jimmy Johnson is like, he pulls the, Jason Cole and I are standing side by side. Jimmy is about 10 feet away with Harvey. And he goes, what is this motherfucking shit that you've written about me? He's pulling out the thing. You're saying I am not doing my motherfucking job. What the motherfucking craziness is this? Look at this motherfucking paragraph. What is this, motherfucker? And I'm standing there, and I'm like, oh, crap. This is not good for Jason Cole.
I didn't write it.
So at one point, he's going down the list of factoids that he believes to be wrong or unfair or inaccurate. And every one of the lists includes motherfucking or some derivative thereof. And I start counting them. So
you're a reporter. You're supposed to keep track.
I just counted them. And with my hands, I'm counting them.
We've seen that move.
Yes. And I ran out of hands.
Damn.
13 was the thing. And Jason was like, Jimmy, it's one of those conversations where Jimmy is like, what do you have to say for yourself? Don't say anything. And Jason is like, hamana. I don't know.
That was Dallas Jimmy that showed up that day.
That was his defense. Well, and motherfucker, what's this other motherfucking thing? And where do you get this motherfucking information? And what kind of motherfucking work is this?
Damn.
So 13, and I'm thinking, hey, why am I here?
Right.
Because
I didn't witness, baby.
I didn't do this.
You're thinking it. You didn't ask it though.
I didn't say crap. I was just counting. And so
this is bad for Jason Cole.
This is not great. And so then at some point, suddenly the wrath turns to me. And he's like, and you? And I'm like, I was busy counting. My turn. Let me tell you something. I'm going to talk to your publisher. If you don't straighten this guy out, I'm going to have your job.
He put you responsible for Jason.
Wait a second. You're going to talk to my publisher that I didn't straighten him out? And it's my fault? I have to straighten him out? And so what? And actually what he said was, if you don't straighten this motherfucker out.
I bet he did.
And I remember Jimmy, you know, had been at the University of Miami coach. So he had a relationship with people at the Miami Herald at the highest levels. And I really should tell this better, but it wasn't.
You're doing a pretty damn good job.
It wasn't. And if you don't straighten this motherfucker out, I'm going to tell your publisher. No, that wasn't it. It was, and you, if you don't straighten this motherfucker out, I'm going to tell your motherfucking publisher.
Right.
So.
And you knew that he had the potential to make that call.
Yeah, and he did. And I'm like, I didn't say crap. But it was like, it showed me, the funniest part to me was he's in his practice shorts and he had put the article in his back pocket that he had not cut out with scissors because it was ragged the way he ripped cut out. It out.
Can you imagine how furious he was when he was tearing it out?
He had highlighted and circled, and he was going to go down every single point. And
practice is going on.
Oh, yeah. The Miami Dolphins are practicing on field one and field two. Their head coach, who is telling us he doesn't take time away from the team. Right. He's taking time away from the team.
You didn't point that out to him, did you?
I didn't seem to have a moment between motherfuckings to interject that. No, I did not.
It's an all-timer.
Yeah, that is an all-timer. That's
a little different from the Shula Chew out.
He'd be that kind of guy, though, talking to people that way, but that's a different story. I mean, think about it. Right after that, Dave had to be a completely different story. When Wines comes in after Jimmy, you know, and it had to be a few different, you know, stories. And I respect Dave a lot. Right? He was a different kind of guy, man. I like Dave a lot. But had to be a little different than Jimmy at that point, huh?
Well, it was a time in Dolphins history where hair was a big deal. So they go from Jimmy Johnson and the hair to Dave Wannstedt. And what was his signature move on the sideline when he was confused? He would like
run his hand through
his hair.
Not to mention the stash.
there was that too. But yeah, Dave was a good guy, a good person, salt of the earth. But you know what, OJ, Seth, some guys, there is the idea that some guys need to be coordinators and not head coaches. And probably that is their life calling. And I think that Dave was probably one of those. I think he, you know, obviously he won a national championship as the coordinator at the University of Miami. He won Super Bowls as a coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. But as head coach of the Chicago Bears and head coach of the Miami Dolphins,
right.
You know.
Yep.
Didn't have the same result.
No.
You know. Right. And I don't think that's a bad thing, by the way.
I think some guys, like you said, I think some guys, that is their calling, to be OC or DC or in those position coaches and not really the head guy. It's a different world, obviously.
His problem was that Dave believed everybody, and he took in a lot of opinions, but he went with the last guy's opinion. Whatever the last guy said to him, hey, that's a good idea.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The shame of it all, Juice, is, as Armando says that, is there were two or three guys, and I don't have to name names, there were two or three guys that were all kind of pulling for power in Dave's ear, and they literally would kind of try and place themselves in line to be the last guy that Dave talked to before a major decision was made.
It was an amazing time, and he was want to change his mind. I think Seth knows about that. Changing his mind.
I do. We're going to go there?
Yeah, man. Yeah. You
want me to tell it, or you gotta, kick it off?
That ain't my story, brother.
No,
that's
it's
your
not.
Story.
No, it's not.
I just found out about it.
You're talking about photos.
Yes.
How did you find out about it?
People tell me stuff.
That's right.
It's a beautiful thing.
People tell me stuff.
People tell him stuff. So what he's alluding to here, Juice, I don't even know if I've told this story on the podcast or not, but... So Dave's last year, 2004, the 2003 season was my last season. So I think it was a 2002 off season. There's the hallway that back where Stu's office used to be. You'd come right in from the, you know, you made this walk a billion times. You come right in from the parking lot and you pass Stu's office, and there's a long hallway where you pass all the meeting rooms, and then you hang a left and you head over towards the locker room. And at that time, now it's beautifully decorated, but at that time, those walls were barren. Right. I mean, it was almost like walking into a dorm room or something.
Right.
They were just plain tan walls. And we did a lot of beautiful decorating and pictures and everything upstairs. And I worked very closely with Dave Cross, with Scott Stone, with Brian Wiedmeyer on finding the right photos that were significant. When we would have games, we would log certain moments. And it was something that I kind of, you know, when you're lower on the totem pole, you got to grab onto something and do it really well. And so I embraced it and enjoyed it. And that off season, Brian Wiedmeyer sent me to Los Angeles. They had NFL photos at the time. So he paid for me to go to Los Angeles. I spent 2 days with Paul Spinelli and looked through. I mean, I was looking at photos of from back in the 40s and 50s. It was really an amazing experience. But our goal was, let's celebrate the great players that have been here with the Dolphins and have those walls represent every Miami Dolphin that's been to a Pro Bowl. So that when players come in, they can kind of walk through the hallowed halls and see all the greatest Dolphins that have ever been there. And we decided we would find action shots and then those Pro Bowl photos that they would always take at every Pro Bowl. And I was, again, looking through negatives and things that were distorted and destroyed. It's not like now where, you know, if I'm looking for a photo and you email Scott Stone, he can find it in 30 seconds on the computer. It's not like that anymore. Right. And 2 days in L.A., come back, we get all the photos. I remember like it was yesterday. Got them printed, got them framed, spent a significant amount of money, just sending me out to LA, right? But spent a significant amount of money. Then they hung them all up on the walls, and Craig Ferguson, and I think, I don't know if Dave O'Connor was still there, but I mean, they're sitting there and they wanted what's the right height? You know, well, these guys aren't 6 feet tall, they're averaging 6'4", you know, and they hung them, then they rehung them, and it was this whole project, and everybody raved about them. Everybody was in the building, talked about how cool it was to see the history, and then the coaches came back from vacation. And I go downstairs one day. It was Rhett Taccone at the time. And Rhett is there with Ferguson, and they're taking all the fucking photos down. I'm like, what are you guys doing? You're not hanging them a third time. He goes, no, we're putting them in 99. So 99 was basically the storage unit underneath the bleachers that everything, every time it rains, everything got, I don't know why they stored anything there because everything got ruined. I'm like, what do you mean 99? What are you talking? Wait, what? Does Brian know? Yeah, Brian knows. I talked to him about it. What do you mean you talked about it? And he goes, here, come here. And he calls me around the side. He goes, your boy wants him down. I'm like, who's my boy? Coach wants everything taken down. What the fuck do you mean? Well, he doesn't want Pro Bowl players. He doesn't want Pro Bowl players. So you have to understand the context of this. How many Pro Bowl players did we have that year?
A lot.
I don't know. We had like 11 guys make it to the Pro Bowl that year. We didn't make it to the playoffs.
That's a big problem.
And the entire offseason, Armando and everybody else wrote about how Dave Wannstedt had a roster full of Pro Bowlers. I think we had as many Pro Bowlers as anybody in the league. And we didn't even make the playoffs.
Right.
And Dave heard about it the entire offseason, and he was fucking tired of hearing about it. And then he walks in, his first walk into his building.
It's the Pro Bowl players.
And it's the Pro Bowl players haunting him. They're there to haunt him.
It was sending him a message,
damn
it.
And he couldn't have gotten up. Yeah, well, and I think he said something to the extent of, like, I can't have Randy McMichael walking in here worried more about the Pro Bowl than winning games. And I was like, well, fuck, you write into his contract. If he makes it to the Pro Bowl, you incentivize him. Maybe right. If he makes it to the Pro Bowl, we've done pretty well.
Yeah, exactly.
I was hurt.
I mean, it, obviously, it's a performance gig.
Clearly,
right?
I haven't gotten over right? it either.
Think about this, though. The head coach of the
The
head coach of the Miami Dolphins is thinking about that.
Yeah.
Is thinking about that. So the year before, he had the NFL's leading sacker. He had the NFL's leading rusher.
That's right.
In Ricky Williams. The leading sacker is some guy named Taylor.
Perhaps you've heard of him.
Perhaps you've heard of
maybe.
Him. And, you know, Brock Marion is a Pro Bowler. And
Sam and Pat. And all
Sam
of them.
Is a Pro Bowler.
And Tim Ruddy might even have been that year.
It's like they had Pro Bowlers coming out of their ears, but they were 10-6 and they lost their last two games. And they didn't make the pro. They didn't make the playoffs.
Damn.
And not only that, but the last two games that they played, I believe they had leads late in the fourth quarter and blew it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that.
Yeah. So
my damn pictures got put in 99.
I
think they eventually put them in somewhere in the stadium when they built. You know, the stadium's obviously gone through some changes since then. But they built that area where it was kind of like the hall of, and they had Coach Shula's desk and the whole thing. And so that was like, hey, they're going to be at the stadium. I'm like, they weren't fucking for the fans; they were for the players.
Well, you know what's funny is now they've got those walls lined with what?
Yeah,
you know, the great players of Dolphins history.
Right. Yep.
Right. Yep. They do.
Yeah, well.
Seth, you okay, man?
Nah.
We need to take a break?
Yeah. God damn, that's twice. First, Mickey and Minnie aren't real. And now I had to relive that experience. Damn it. All right, let me shift gears here. Yeah, I got to shift gears here to one of my more favorable experiences. And Armando and I have worked together a lot in a lot of different ways, certainly with me as a PR guy for the team. And then, you know, working with Jason and all the way up to his Hall of Fame induction. But in 2007, which was, as we have already determined, the Cam Cameron season, not a great year for anybody involved. But, you know, Cam, for whatever reason, made it his point to come in, and he didn't like Zach or JT. He didn't like his two best players and had a million issues with those guys. And something had been written by Armando that clearly Cam had told him, and I don't remember exactly what it was, and Armando could shed some light, but I got pissed off, and I'm sitting at home late at night, and I got my phone, and I text Ethan Skolnick. All right, so Ethan at the time, you know, a great friend of mine, writing for another newspaper. I text Ethan, I go, fucking Armando. And then I'm kind of looking around, then I look back at my phone, and I'm like, oh shit, I didn't text Ethan Skolnick. I texted Armando, fucking Armando. And I'm like I froze and I didn't know what to do. And I'm like, all I can do is man up at this point. So right. I call Armando because I'm waiting and I'm staring and I'm like, is he looking at it?
Yeah.
I think it was before the three dots where you could see if someone was going to text you back, and I'm staring. I'm like, I got to call fucking Armando. And so I call him up. He's like, hey, couldn't be any happier to hear from me. Hey, what's up, dude? I go, did you not check your phone? And he goes, no, what? I mean, you called, right? And I go, no, your text. And I go, and he goes, no. And I'm like, well, let me just give you a heads up. and I told him, and he just laughing his ass off. And he goes, well, tell me the other side of it. Tell me. So I proceed to tell him what I feel is the other side of this thing. And you remember this?
I do remember this.
Yeah. What was it that you wrote?
I don't remember the reasoning. But I
Cam
remember,
propaganda.
Probably.
JT was being a selfish veteran, something, you know, one of those deals.
Right. And obviously that got you to, you know.
Yeah. Let me tell you how Cam Cameron's losing the whole team. Let me tell you how Cam Cameron's more concerned about the seating chart on the plane and picking up trash in a fucking locker room than coaching up a team that's got a bunch of actually good players.
Trash.
Yeah. So then Armando wrote that the next day. And then JT called me and he goes, fucking Armando. And actually, he got on me and he said, how much did you tell him? Like, what did you tell him? I'm like, bro, I'm sorry. Like, I can't let this narrative be. And so by the end of it, he was okay and it worked out. But JT didn't like to, you know, play that fair behind the scenes and rock the boat and all that. Mm-hmm. He was trying to be a good soldier, even right in the midst of
getting donged.
Yeah. God. Left and right. Right. Left and right.
But, you know, again,
there's way too many stories that I'm telling
at the end of
here
it, OJ, so we got both sides.
Right.
Right. And fair enough. That usually there's one side that's probably got more of a case than the other. I'm not judge or jury, bro. I'm just the guy that puts it out there and right you decide. And now looking back on it, you know, a decade, more than a decade later, oh my God, Cam Cameron. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So it was basically pitting a washout head coach against a future Pro Football Hall of Famer and a future Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist.
Right.
Which right was just stunning to me. Stunning.
Oh, man. Oh, man. You guys got some great stories together, man.
Yeah,
you guys got a history that's better than some
Juice of
the
is just watching. It's like he's tuning in.
And the beauty of it is, you know, Seth and I are friends.
Yeah.
So, you know, the
absolutely
the Armando part, yeah, it's
yeah, I mean, I was pissed off, but it wasn't like it wasn't personal. I
right,
was
right,
like,
right. Look at you guys
shit
are still cool. That's all that matters.
Yeah, we're good.
You know, you talk about, you know, all the information you get from guys and, you know, how accommodating some of these guys are. But I know there's one coach that I think it wasn't as accommodating, and I think he actually snapped on you in a press conference one time, Mr. Adam Gase. Coach Gase, tell me a little bit about Adam and why did he go off on you in the press conference?
Because I told him the truth.
Yeah, truth hurts sometimes.
So, you know, this was 2017 or 18? Was it 2017? No, 2018.
It's all a wash,
last
man
year. No, 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah.
So it's a Ryan Tannehill situation, and Ryan Tannehill is hurt again, and now there's thinking of bringing him back and when to bring him back, and everybody and their mother understands that, hey, you know, it's not going the right way. We're in year 7, and he has not stepped up to the level that everybody expects him to step up to. Of course, he's done that now in Tennessee.
Yeah, right. Well,
but, you know,
do the math.
Short sample size in Tennessee.
Right.
Anyway, so Adam gets asked about Tannehill's ceiling, and he goes off about how we still don't know what his ceiling is, and that set me off because it's year 7. We don't know what his ceiling is, and, you know, earlier in the year he was really good, and so that makes you want to believe that it's going to be a lot higher than you think. And at that point, I am just in the press conference and I'm seething because I don't buy any of this. And so I just told him, you know, that's not true. And he's like, what do you mean? What's not true? And I said, he's not improving. It's the same guy. We're seeing the same player playing. He goes, well, earlier in the season, he was pretty good. I said, no, he wasn't.
Right.
I mean, I'm telling the coach of the Miami Dolphins, his quarterback, who he's basically adopted the last few years, is not what he says or thinks he is.
PR staff had to be like, oh, shit.
And I said, no, that's not, you know, no, he hasn't. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, I mean, the first 3 games, he's, you know, 2 of the touchdowns that he threw, he basically caught and threw up in the air, and somebody running like a jet sweep type action snatches his out of the air and runs 80 yards for a touchdown, and you're saying that's a touchdown pass. I mean, that's not a touchdown pass. I can do that.
Right.
That's not playing quarterback in the NFL. And he's like, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know. I can't even argue with you because you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, okay.
That's really those touchdown passes, boy.
I went back and I looked at the stats. Ryan Tannehill's quarterback rating at that time was basically what his quarterback rating had been 2 years earlier when he was, you know, playing for the Dolphins. And Gase had admitted he's a game manager for us we're giving the ball to Jay Ajayi. We're limiting his throws to under 30 a game. He's throwing for 198 yards a game. We're not putting him in a tough position where he needs to do things that are over and above what he probably needs to do,
right,
or can do. And Jay Ajayi is rushing for 1,250 yards. And that's why they're 10-6. But now it's like he's doing the same thing here 2 years later, but he's improving.
Right.
And so I just...
You weren't buying it.
It just didn't work out. And it went, you know, obviously it went viral. I'll give him this. Adam Gase is a cool guy. I like Adam Gase. 2 days later, he's like, you all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm all good.
Yeah.
You know,
he didn't know the Jimmy Johnson story. That's why.
Yeah, yeah, this is nothing.
You're small time, buddy.
You know, I'm good.
I've been here. I've done this before. Yeah.
So, you know, it was good. It was really good. In fact, when the Dolphins played the Jets the second time here, I went over and saw Adam Gase, and he was very nice to me, and all was great.
Oh, good.
And, you know, all good.
Yeah. I talk about Ryan, too. I thought Ryan was, you know, a decent player. But, you know, I always judge quarterbacks on third down and fourth quarters. You know what I mean? And I didn't see that out of Ryan. And, you know, like you say, he's doing things now. But when he was here, you know, third down, fourth quarter, I couldn't count him in the fourth quarter. And that's what most quarterbacks – I talk about Brett Favre all the time. Brett Favre throw you three interceptions in the first half, but also throw three touchdowns in the fourth quarter on you. You know what I mean? And I think that's what most quarterbacks – in my opinion, are judged by. I don't care what your numbers are. You know, I care what you do when it's nut cutting time. And I didn't think Ryan cut enough nuts.
Here's the bottom line to that story.
There's a Gray Rugemer joke in there at some point, I think.
Here's the bottom line. Adam Gase admitted to me much later, if he had come back in 2018, when he was yelling at me about Ryan Tannehill, would have been Ryan Tannehill's last year with the team. If he had been the coach,
sure,
right.
And he wasn't, and they still got rid of him, Brian Flores got rid of him, but he would have gotten rid of him, despite, right, you know, banging on the table that I'm an idiot. Because, yeah,
right.
And that was him sticking up for his guy, right?
Of course.
Isn't that was
of course,
all about that.
Of course.
And, of course, Brian Flores has seen enough of him, too, you know, being on the other side.
I think everybody
so
had. Yeah. And what he's doing in Tennessee, he had not done here in, as you said, seven seasons.
Right.
And I think everyone's happy for him that he's succeeding.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But
great guy. Great guy. Yeah, great guy.
Right.
I've heard nothing but great things. So I do want to talk to you about JT. We talked about JT in the Hall of Fame process. But you mentioned Mean Joe Greene. And I can't let you go. So before we get to this, before we end on that high note, tell us, what's the Mean Joe Greene story?
Yeah. So this is like the mid-90s. And, you know, you guys, competitive guys, you were in a competitive business. I happen to be a competitive person.
We know this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I like to win. And the way I measure wins is if I beat my competitor to a story or if I have information that they don't. And that's how I measure it. And I was starting to notice that there was a lot of information that I was losing on that was relative to the Dolphins' defensive line. And I'm like, what the frick is this? What's going on here? I thought I had this team on lock. And I don't. And Jason Cole is killing me on this defensive line stuff. And so I start snooping around, and someone told me finally, so Joe Greene is his source, and so Joe Greene is helping him. And I'm like, oh yeah, is that the way it works? Okay, very nice. So what does Armando do? I'm gonna mess up Joe Greene. That's what I'm gonna do.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah. And so
you must really like to win, because I think I might just let Joe Greene take that one.
Yeah, no. So what I did was, at the time, the Dolphins' defensive line was good guys, but not great guys. And so if they went a game or two without a sack, it would appear in the Miami Herald that the Dolphins' defensive line, coached by Mean Joe Greene — he didn't like to be called Mean, by the way — Mean Joe Greene has not had a sack in two consecutive games.
That's fucked up.
If some other team had a good game running the ball, the Dolphins defensive front comma, coached by.
You picked a fight with Mean Joe Green.
Mean Joe Green has not.
Wow.
Is now sunk to 23rd in the NFL in run stopping.
Oh, man.
And I just did this every day that I could. And so back then, and Seth will attest to this, we were able, when we asked to talk to coaches, we would be able to go in their office, and especially Tom Alavadati, who was the...
That actually predates me.
Yeah, well, okay. So the defensive coordinator. And one day I'm up talking to Tom, and in his office, he's behind his desk, I'm in the visitor's chair, and we're talking. Tom Alavadati, great guy, loved him, had a great relationship with him. And so there's a knock on the door, and it's Mean Joe Green. And he opens the door, and he's like, Tom. And then he sees me.
Oh, he didn't know you were there.
He didn't know that I was there. And he's like, there was this pause as he's looking at me, and he goes, Tom, let's go do the tape breakdown that we were talking about. And Tom says, all right, I'll be right there. Mean Joe Green steps out. 30 seconds later, no knock this time, he barges into the room. Tom, let's go do something important. I'll be right there, Joe. I'll be right there. 30 seconds after that, Tom, get rid of this guy already. Let's go do something important. At which point, I said, thanks, Joe. And he goes, fuck you! He goes, fuck you! And I don't know what possessed me.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sitting in Tom's chair with Mean Joe Green, like, from here to the door. And I said, and I stood up and I go, no, fuck you.
No, you didn't.
And Tom flies over his desk and he's like, guys.
Let's go on stage.
Enough of this. I have no idea. So,
wow.
And this is like what, 1994, 95?
Yeah, had to be.
I was maybe 29 years old, 30 years old. Oh. I don't know what possessed me at at 200 pounds and not an athlete, never been an athlete, not capable of doing anything against an athlete.
And not known as Mean Armando Sacher.
Right,
and
right.
Not having crushed much bigger men in the trenches on an NFL field. I convinced myself that I could take Mean Joe Green. Because Mean Joe Green at the time was like in his late 40s. And he wasn't, you know, like built anymore. He was kind of, but he was still 300 pounds.
Yeah, he would have ended right. You.
He would have, and I was thinking to myself, I'll hit him first and run.
Yeah.
I can dodge. I can do something. I'll poke him with a pen.
Yeah.
I'll do something. But so that happened like I would say 10 years later, we're at a Hall of Fame function with Edwin Pope, who, you know, was a great guy and was a legend, truly a legend. The Dolphins press box is named after him. And we're sitting in Canton at this Pro Football Hall of Fame thing. And who walks up and sits at the next table for this Pro Football Hall of Fame function than Mean Joe Green? And Edwin Pope was like friends with Mean Joe
Green.
He was
friends with everybody.
And so Joe calls him over.
Oh, boy.
And so Edwin leaves me for like 15 minutes, and they're talking and guffawing and having a great time. And he comes back, and I said, so that went well? And he goes, yeah, but I don't understand. He's, you know, Edwin was from Georgia, and he had this southern draw. Armando, yeah, I don't understand. What is this thing you had with Joe Green? He says you're not a good person. And I was like, yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
It's kind of a long story.
I'm not a good person. That's what Joe Green's take
that
on Armando
is too
was.
Funny right
you're
there,
not a good person.
Oh, God. That is too good.
Man, oh, man.
I almost don't want to transition, but I can't leave this level. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I'm just, that took some balls, man.
No, that took some insanity.
Or crazy. Yeah, it's like catch a punch.
That was
like
stupid.
You were a punt returner. That's not courageous. That was ridiculous. That was just dumb.
You were a punt returner that day, that's for sure.
Oh, too funny. Well, good transition, because you're at a Hall of Fame function and you were with Edwin Pope. And I want to kind of, especially now where we're in a Hall of Fame season again, where we're rooting for a guy in Zach Thomas. But I'd love to talk about Jason Taylor's journey, not his playing journey, but his journey when he became eligible for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. For those who don't know, I imagine everybody does at this point in time. But Edwin Pope, for the longest, was the South Florida vote for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And when Edwin, you know, may he rest in peace, when Edwin retired, he passed that baton to Armando. And Armando had, I guess you had a vote for a handful of years before Jason right. became eligible, but your first guy that you got to present and work towards getting into the hall was JT. And it was an amazing and just informative journey for me. To see that process. But what can you share with us about that process?
Well, let me share that JT has great people around him. Let's start with that.
Yeah. I'm not going to interrupt. I'll let him go for a while.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The Jason Taylor Foundation, run by, you know, Seth Levitt, is stars. And obviously Seth wants the best for JT and wanted Jason Taylor in the Hall of Fame. I obviously wanted Jason Taylor in the Hall of Fame. Scott Stone worked with us. Harvey Green worked with us. And together, even though Jason decided, I'm not going to campaign, I'm not going to actively, you know, try to make this happen, the thing that speaks for me is what I did on the field.
He was adamant about that.
And he was adamant about that. So I still had a great resource in that Seth, who knows JT better than anybody, and the Dolphins in the form of Scott Stone and Harvey Green, you know, were very good. And we put together what I thought was a banging campaign for JT. And it's weird because it involves a lot of behind the scenes, some behind the scenes calls and, you know, can you do this for me kind of thing? And what do you think? And, oh, you don't think so? Well, let me give you something else to think about. Or, you know, absolutely, he's a guy. And in which case, I'm good. It also involves a lot of finding ways to give a narrative that maybe most people haven't figured out or don't know of. And what we did was, I believe it was Seth's idea. Let's just compare him to other Hall of Famers and people who are in the Hall of Fame, because frankly, you know, Michael Strahan was in the Hall of Fame at that point, but it had taken him 2 years to get in. And personally, I didn't want to do it again, to be honest with you. It was a rigorous thing.
Well, the competitor came out too, right. Juice. You know, right. Armando's being a little bit, he said he doesn't want to do it again, but he is a competitive
no
guy.
Doubt.
And he's like, if I'm going to do this, I want to be a guy who went in and got a guy in his first
right.
ballot.
Right. Yeah.
But can I share, and you know, stop me at any point, and obviously we won't put anything in here that you don't want to talk about, but because I know that it is a sacred process, right?
Sure.
But I got a call from Armando a year earlier, Juice, when they were voting on the 2016 class, and he called me and he said, are you ready? I'm like, for what? You know, I like, for what? And he goes, well, I just left the voting for this year's Hall of Fame class. Kevin Green is finally going to get in. That means Jason Taylor's next. Are you ready? And so I was like, wow, he's thinking about this as
right.
he's walking out of the 2016 vote. Armando was already thinking about, what is it going to take to present JT's case the best way possible? Because, again, let's give
right.
JT credit. JT is deserving of being a first ballot Hall of Famer,
absolutely.
Clearly. And he did everything he could do. But now what could we do? Do we want to just leave it up to chance? Do we want to do the famous Edwin Pope when Dan Marino came up and he had 10 minutes to present? Do you know that story?
No.
So Edwin Pope's presentation for Dan Marino was – and the way it works is the presenter – gets up and talks about the candidate to the other presenters, and then they all vote. And the point is, you want to convince them to vote for your guy. Edwin Pope's presentation was, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Dan Marino. And he sat down.
That was it.
That's all he did.
And you know what? Basically, that was another way of Edwin Pope saying Dan Marino don't need no fucking
Super Bowl credential.
Super Bowl to tell people he's Dan Marino or important. You know, yeah. He doesn't need that.
Right.
He doesn't need that.
But Armando didn't want to leave it to chance and just go with that for JT. So, but he called me, and so then we went and had lunch.
We went and had lunch, and it was, you know, it was a process. It really was.
Yeah.
I remember we were in these offices, what was it, for a good 3 or 4 hours.
Yep, with Scott and Harvey. Yep. And so that was, well, there were a couple things that, Armando did an amazing job.
Yeah.
He really kind of said, look, this is what I think needs to happen. You actually have some ideas of how you think they should do the voting and the presenting, but they are maintaining this process the way it is. And Armando kind of wants them to modernize it. And that's his battle to fight some other day.
Right.
But, he really, told us what made sense, what didn't make sense, what we had to think about. Not only what we should do, but when the right time to do these things. He really had given a lot of thought about it, and it was very impressive. And I'm not just saying it because you're sitting here, but I just had no idea. Working around the game as long as I had no idea all that went into it. But we sat down, and he said, these are the things people do that I think no one gives a shit about, and these are the things. And, you know, you do want to get letters, but you can't put all your stake in the letters. Who do you think will write letters? And I was like, well, what about Tom Brady? And he goes, you think Tom Brady will write a letter? Yeah. I was like, let's give it a shot. They got a good, and son of a gun, he did, which was big unbelievable.
Letter, yeah. Seth got a Tom letter. Brady letter.
Yeah.
And that was the thing.
Because it was a big deal.
When the GOAT says you're good,
yeah,
you're good.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
And it wasn't just the, you know, I mean, he's Tom Brady, but he also was playing in that Super Bowl, dude, which I know he plays in for all of them. But it was great. But Armando said, let's not save it to when he's in the room. You know, let's use this in the vote beforehand. And so it was really fascinating
everything
to watch.
Yeah.
When do you pull the trigger? Yeah. Was really, really fascinating to watch that process. But when we met here you know, Scott and Harvey and everybody, you know, you're talking about people that just are brilliant PR folks who I learned a lot from coming up in the game. And they all came to the table with their facts, and we all had our facts, and we were going to sit down and kind of throw everything on the table and say what makes the most sense. And I was driving to a meeting that was supposed to be on Sunrise Boulevard, and I all of a sudden had this idea that came to me, and I friggin' missed I ended up at Atlantic Boulevard and was late to my meeting, the whole thing, but I'm calling Armando. I'm like, I got it. He's like, well, just save it for the meeting. But the thought process, and he's right, we wanted to compare him to other Hall of Famers, but we didn't want to just compare him to Reggie White and Bruce Smith on sacks alone, even though sacks were the thing that we were leading with the whole time. He was sixth all time, 139 and a half sacks. Those guys had 200 sacks. Like, how do you compare anything to those two guys are just unicorns.
Right.
And so that's where the Strahan conversation came into play, was that Michael Strahan, by all accounts, maybe should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he wasn't. And when we compared him to JT, and, you know, Armando the speech was brilliant, but when he compared him to JT, outside of being 2.5 sacks behind Strahan, all the other things that made JT special, it was unreal in a comparison.
Interceptions, fumble recoveries, touchdowns, all kinds of shit.
We made it about having a playmaker rather than a defensive end.
Right.
And I think that was compelling, and obviously it was compelling enough to where Jason Taylor went from, you know, I'll be honest with you, the day before the vote, I was talking to Mike Tannenbaum, who was the, you know, the executive vice president at the time of the Miami Dolphins. And afterwards he says to me, so how do you think JT's going to do? And I'm like, you know, look, I'm a man of faith. I'm not going to talk against JT. I said, he's going to make it. I'm going to, you know, we're going to get him in.
You said that the whole time.
And
when it happens, not if, when it happens.
When it happens. And he said, really? Really?
Damn.
And it wasn't that he didn't think he was a Hall of Famer. It was the first ballot.
There's a, talk about unicorns. There is a plateau where you are a Pro Football Hall of Famer. But there's a higher plateau where you are a first ballot Pro Football Hall of Famer. And those are the elite of the elite of the elite. And Jason Taylor definitely was going to be a Pro Football Hall of Famer. There the fight was to help get him to the plateau. And all the plays that he made in his career and all the things that he did in his career compared to people who were also first ballot Hall of Famers, obviously was a compelling case for that. And, you know, our work was, I thought it was stellar.
It was really cool, stuff, man. If you ever get this, you know, if Armando ever shares the speech.
That's such a unique look at it, man. That's a great, you know, perspective you guys give us on, you know, how it happens, the process, you know, and the plateaus. People don't even think about that, how, you know, it's important. You said he's going to be in the Hall of Fame, but to be first ballot is like the top shit.
Oh, absolutely.
And no defensive end had been a first ballot since Reggie and Bruce. And so, like, became the measuring stick, and we had to change that narrative a little bit. Yeah. And not to use JT's change the narrative conversation. But I love that. So we took the Strahan narrative, but then Armando found a quote from Strahan where Strahan called JT the king of the big play. And so he's like, that was in the speech. if Michael Strahan says Jason Taylor's the king of the big play.
So how are you not going to put him in?
Right.
Because he's the king of the big play.
Right.
And Tom Brady says he's awesome. And the stats say he belongs. And oh, by the way, yeah, you think that all these other guys are great, but they don't stack up on touchdowns and interceptions and fumble recoveries and fumble returns and all these strip sacks and all these other things that change the direction of play of games. And so that got him in.
Cool.
And you said that in that process, if people question your presentation, right, there is discussion afterwards.
So after the presenter is done, the rest of the room, the other 47 people, can ask you questions and present their opinions about whether the guy is deserving or not. And so Jason Cole got up and also spoke on behalf of Jason Taylor. And then the question went out, any questions? And no one said a word. There was no discussion.
And I'm like, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah.
There was no discussion.
It was, and drop the mic. That's it. Nothing else needs to be said.
We dropped the mic, but then I picked it back up again. And then I went at Michael Strahan because, God bless him, I love Michael Strahan. But there are 4 or 5 New York-based selectors in that room. And I knew that they didn't want or might not want Jason Taylor to be a first ballot when their guy was not a first ballot. And so I went at Michael Strahan.
And we had to be careful about that because you didn't want to piss those guys off, had to kind of prove it to them.
But and I we did.
Yeah.
It's a small, you know, at the end you get another minute and a half. And again, Michael Strahan, great. Guys, we love your guy. But our guy is the guy. And that's how it worked. It was amazing.
It was really cool.
That's good stuff, man.
It's a really cool experience.
And at the end of it, this is something that I haven't really told anyone. So we're sitting in the room and we're starting to vote. And after it's all done, and Bob Glauber, who works for Newsday, who is one of the several New York representatives, because they have two teams and they're the big market and so forth and so on. He texts me as we're sitting in the room. He goes, "You got your guy in."
The vote, even he just knew
he knew
where it was going.
You got
you didn't even tell me that.
Yeah, I've got the text.
Wow.
And I'm like, yeah, I think I did.
Good shit.
Because no one challenged us.
Talk about it, man. You've been in some other ones. How long does the discussion go when there are questions?
Like T.O.
Is there any arguing? How guys like talking? Yeah. How's it go?
The T.O. discussion went like half an hour.
Yeah.
The Paul Tagliabue discussion has been contentious for years.
Right.
Guys that I think are Hall of Famers have gotten destroyed in that room.
Oh man, I can't imagine.
You know, and they're
glad those guys aren't in there, right? Because those egos.
Right. So you know, it's a thing. There are very few guys that just sail through. You know, obviously Dan Marino, ladies and gentlemen, Dan Marino,
right.
Okay, yeah, he doesn't need a card. Brett Favre, those guys, Peyton Manning, someday Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And Jason Taylor.
Yeah. That's what's up, man.
Great, it's awesome
stuff, man.
Really, really cool, man. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. Yeah. I didn't know to what degree we could share, because, you know, I know the first year or so you're like, hey, we don't talk about what happened in that room. But, you know, we're a few years removed from that. So is awesome. But more than that, I appreciate you taking the time and going to bat for coming on this show.
Absolutely.
And making sure that we can do it. Yep. So it means a lot. I know we'll all be following what you're writing about and talking about in the Herald. And at Armando Salguero on your Twitter account, since none of us are blocked any longer. and hopefully we stay that way for the whole season.
Or muted.
And, that's right. Yeah, man. Just I appreciate you spending some time with us.
No, it's my pleasure. And I'm a big fan of you guys and a big fan of the show. So it is a privilege that I was able to share this time with you.
Hey, thanks for diving in, Armando.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, dog fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude, we okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budging. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fins. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. Fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rockin' with OJ and Seth when you dive up in that fish tank. Dog fans with attitude, we about to dive up in that fish tank.